Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
This is October 16th, 2020, and this is episode 105. And it happens to be Friday, so it's Fascism Friday.
Fascism Friday. And we're back after Mark's near brush with death.
Yeah, we had a longer break earlier, and then we came back just for one or two episodes. Maybe just one, I don't remember. And then I got sick. I'm still pretty sick, but I'm healthy enough to talk. Sit up.
Okay.
So then I had to be back for fascism.
Right. And so then, of course, you know, when we're gone for so long, we wonder, is anybody still out there?
I don't know. I don't think they are.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you are there, you could say hi to us. And if you're not there, then you can't.
Steve. To introduce yourselves, I'm Mark Van Stunek. I'm the director for the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct Mike of the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And so today, we want to talk about what we're calling this fascism denial. And this was spurred by the fact that, I have to admit to a great deal of curiosity about why anybody at this point who seems like a rational human being is supporting Donald Trump. Now, you know, there's a whole group of folks who are sort of, quote, the crazies, right? You know, the QAnon conspiracy theory people, the, you know, Breitbart crowd, the militia folks. Yeah, I'm not talking about that because I actually think that is fortunately a fairly small number of people still. I'm talking about this huge swath of folks who, you know, and people will talk about this, you know, their friends, their relatives, their nieces and nephews, the sort of just average person out there who, you know, you interact with at work or see at the grocery store or whatever, who, you know, is no more weird than me, yet who is a Trump supporter. And so on the radio, you know, they've been doing all these things where they go around, they interview people, first-time voters, different voters in different places. And so there were two of these folks that they interviewed that really struck me. One was the farmer in Iowa. Of course, that's a big thing in our political system. They're always interviewing farmers in Iowa.
There's anyone who has political power in our society, it's the farmer from Iowa.
Yeah. And then the other one was a young woman from St. Thomas College in Minneapolis. Which, for those of you who are not in Minneapolis, is a small private Catholic school. You know, very, very good school, very well known. I've actually done some work with a guy there that's in their sustainability engineering department. You know, so they're not any kind of a big right-wing institution by any means.
Some of their departments can lean conservative, but... Yeah. Not like in some sort of extremist way.
Yeah, well, it's not like they don't teach science. Yeah, right. It's not like they don't teach science.
They're conservatives. They're fiscal conservatives who want to have smart fiscal policy, like that kind of, yeah.
Yeah. And so the farmer basically, this was fascinating. So he basically admits that he's worse off than he was 4 years ago because of Trump's policies. But he thought they'd be getting better. And again, he's just talking about farming. Like, that's all he talked about, his how this affects him. And he thought they're getting better. And so he was just going to vote for Trump because he knows what he's getting. That's what he kept saying. I know what I'm getting. And then the young woman said, and, you know, both these people, I'm pretty sure were white. Obviously, it was the radio, so I could see them. But I'm pretty sure they were both white. And the young woman was like, well, you know, Trump's for law and order. And there was these scary riots in Minneapolis. So
you have to almost obligatory air quotes for law and order. such a great
myth around that. So basically, both these people had this incredibly narrow scope of interest that was focused on themselves. And they were just kind of going like, okay, well, this guy is maybe a little better for me. And so that's why I'm going to vote for him. And yeah, and that I find that really, really both interesting and incredibly disturbing at the same time.
Some early comments here. Gregory writes, they weren't undecided. They were just emboldened now to make public a decision they made a long time ago.
Right. Yeah. So there's those folks. Now, again, I mean, these two people in particular, the reason they got on was, one, the guy got on because he was a farmer in Iowa. And then the young woman got on because she was a first time voter. So that was for the two of them. Yeah, let's roll some of these other ideas.
Series writes, it is because people don't question capitalism and think of themselves as embarrassed millionaires. One of my favorite quotes, that Americans are temporarily embarrassed millionaires. Plus, they are already believing that punching down is a necessary evil for their own survival and self-esteem. Although they don't think it's punching down. That's delusional.
Yeah.
Or at least the being snickered by mythologies.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Kathleen.
Kathleen writes, my husband is in Wisconsin today because his father is dying. Sorry to hear that, Kathleen.
Yep.
He says that there are Trump signs everywhere. The clerk at the motel desk was not wearing a mask. When Scott objected, the guy said that a mask mandate is not a law. So there.
Right. Yeah. And so what I really realized in, you know, listening to these two people and others, but these two really stood out for me, is just how narrow the focus of most people really is. Just this like tiny little slice of life that affects them or that they think affects them. And that's all that they see and all that they care about. And, you know, I really want to connect this to the issue of spiritual formation, because, you know, one of the things I've noticed so much over the years of leading meditation retreats and being with, you know, thousands of people in this kind of situation, is how scary contemplative practice is. And that's kind of a universal thing, right? And actually, Mark and I had a great experience of that. We had two guys literally go running, screaming out of our retreat. They fled in the middle of the night, leaving us strange little notes. They were staying at my house, so they just vanished from my house. And they left me a little note, and they left us a little note at the retreat site.
That leads to all sorts of ironies, but the big one is that they felt we didn't talk enough about Jesus. Which you mentioned Jesus and then talked about how this contemplation stuff is a way of relating with Jesus. It's just, right. And this is part of the mentality, like you need to have some sort of objective external authority to submit to. Like once it's subjective, then it all goes, then it's scary because then you have to look at it.
Yeah, and so the reason that this contemplative practice thing is scary is because it expands our view, right? So when we're sitting in silence or we're doing some other particular kind of practice, our mind cannot, in the same way that it can when we're doing our normal day and routine, it cannot continually narrow the focus of our ego self. And so it cannot screen out everything else. Mm-hmm. And that becomes terrifying because we suddenly start to realize like, oh my gosh, there's this whole world out there. There's other people, other experiences, you know, other thoughts that I have, you know, I have desires. I think about sex. I think about, you know, I have bad feelings towards people, whatever it is. And our view starts growing and expanding, and that really freaks us out. And on the other hand, if I can keep my view really narrow, and I can think the only issue in Trump with Trump is, are soybean prices going to go up or down? I mean, that's literally what this guy said. You know, and he said, well, recently soybean prices are going up, so I guess I'll vote for him again. That was the sum total of his political thinking.
You know, this is, it's interesting. when I go back in my own mental history, you know, the way I was brought up in rural Minnesota, things were very much individualistic. So societal problems were the sum total of bad human choices. And so politics is just what happens when follows the wayward hearts of individuals. So if you want society to be better, you get individuals saved. And then the big bad thing happens when the government gets involved with good individual human interactions. So this is very libertarian, right-wing kind of way of seeing things. And then when I went to Bible college, I had classes on worldview. And so this is the way it's pitched, is like, if you don't see things this way, it's because you don't have a Judeo-Christian worldview. And so there's all this pseudo-philosophy built around how you should look at everything purely individualistically at the moral choices level. Mm-hmm. So this is where it gets weird with the Trump thing. It's not that they think Trump is a good guy. Some of them do. A lot of them are just, look, he's anti the things I hate, and therefore he allows me to then exercise my moral agency to make the world better. Like, that's the delusion right there, that somehow that's how it all works out. And it allows all kinds of wickedness.
Well, and see, the thing is, though, I would even argue that that's even a broader way of thinking than was represented by these two people, right? I mean, that they were just so, you know, there wasn't even anything about world or worldview, right? It was just, you know, I make money off of soybeans. Are soybean prices going up or down? That's what I care about. And that's it. Doesn't matter that there are other people. Doesn't matter this pandemic. Doesn't matter there's anything else. But yeah, I think I mentioned this before. I don't know about on transmission. How, you know, I visited this Bible college once with this friend of mine. I went to the bookstore and I started reading some of the books that students had to get for these classes, and all of them had this self-referential argumentation philosophy. Mm-hmm. So basically, every book, no matter what it was about, started off with a statement along the lines of, the Bible is true because it says it's true.
That's right.
And that was it. Like,
I mean, it's a worship of authority, because all you need some sort of absolute to build on. And so some sort of mystical self-referential absolutism works, because it's self-contained. It's tight. You could never, yeah. It's just the bottom line. And people need that so much that they don't even care what they think, what it's telling them to do.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's functions the way people talk about voting. Like, we don't care who you vote for, just vote, as though that's a universal good. The idea that the Bible is absolutely true is this statement that's put out there, but then it doesn't even matter like where you go with it. If you're genocidal with it, it's like, well, at least you're a Christian.
Right. All right, we got a lot of great comments coming in, so let's get back to that. First of all, hi everybody. Thanks for that you're there.
An article from Gregory posted in one of the Facebook pages. Yep. I'm sure you can Google why the mainstream misses the most dangerous white nationalist women. That seems like it's
the women.
I can see where that's
a really good article.
So much. Yeah. Gus writes, I know a few folks living outside who are voting Trump. I cannot understand. I've tried, but it's absolutely baffling to me. I've met folks that are really in not great situations that support Trump, and it doesn't make any sense to me. Including like an East African, like recent immigrant, like Uber driver, who like was talk about how much he hates U.S. imperialism, and then why he's voting for Trump, because he's like a big man, and so you know what to expect with big men like him. Like, that was his thinking. Like, okay.
Yeah. Well, and again, and so this speaks to this formational issue, right? That if this fits into your narrow worldview, then that feels soothing. You know, it feels comforting somehow, no matter how sort of insane it is. Sirius wants to know where the guys fled. Oh, they fled for home.
For what? And they left because it didn't. We were setting off their heresy sirens because we didn't see Evangelical, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy told me he was getting so anxious he had to triple his medication and it still wasn't helping. So they just left.
That's good to me. There's so much more I could say about that, but I don't want to get. Max wrote, I'm thinking of the group of high school students in Rhode Island who have tried to sue the government for not teaching civics. Many of our schools that kids are required to attend aren't encouraged, allowed to teach about this country in a wider sense, about citizenship, etc. It's maddening. Well, and then, you know, of course, like Trump has been pushing against talking about the foundations of this society in any sort of negative fashion.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's another example, right, of formation. So if, you know, what you get in high school is some incredibly minimalist view of citizenship and our country and all of that, you just, that becomes your narrow focus.
Adam writes, I once talked to someone about an idea that there can be infinite light as well as dark. And I thought of that as very empowering. And she said that was just as scary to her, if not more so.
Hmm. Yeah.
I've talked to people that terrified by the idea of heaven, even more than hell.
Hmm.
It sounds similar.
Yeah. Well, I think, right. I mean, and I think it's infinity. It doesn't matter if it's dark, if it's light, whatever. That broadening one's perspective, you know, is overwhelming and terrifying, right? And I can imagine, for example, that farmer just sort of saying, like, look, I'm having a hard enough time making a living. Like, don't bother me about any of those things. You know, I just want to know, are soybean prices going up? Like, that's all I can stand and handle.
Gregory writes, expanding our view, broad view, perspective, puts me in the mind of the Hebrew notion of bondage as being a place of constriction and constraint, and deliverance as being led into a broad and open space.
Yeah, and of course, in the Exodus story, the broad and open space that you first encounter is the wilderness, and we all know what everybody wanted to do once they were out there. They wanted to go back to jail. And you know, that to me is the sort of bottom line story that brings out this point, right? Because when you do engage in deep contemplative practice, you have a wilderness-like experience. You don't really know where you're wandering. You get disoriented. You know, and for a while, back in the 80s, like, those sensory deprivation tanks were really in, and there was that whole movie based on that. And, you know, and if you've ever done one of those, I mean, they are very disorienting, right? You're floating, you don't really know which way is up or down. And you just, you just have to be in that state of disorientation. And it's very uncomfortable for most people.
Sirius has a link here to a Patreon account. Leave that up for a second. If you want to write more about that, Sirius, that might be helpful to give people some context. Sirius also writes, fascism denial is another sign of anti-body and anti-intellectualism.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. And the anti-body thing, I think, in particular, because, you know, the body is the source of all of these feelings, memories, difficult experiences that are kind of locked in place. And as soon as we start paying attention to our bodies and admit we have bodies and admit those bodies have feelings and and that we have these reactions, right? These bodily reactions. It's very disorienting, and most people find that extremely uncomfortable because we're not trained in that at all.
Well, in fascistic ways of thinking, it's very centered in obedience, and seeing your body almost like a weapon. So even like within Germany, which there's this weird, fascinating contradictions about how nature-centric Hitler was in his vision, because he wanted to create this free, open land with more wildernesses for the Aryan master race. And so there was this sort of quasi love of nature in there, but it wasn't one that where people were getting in touch with themselves and their vulnerabilities. No. It was about becoming fierce and powerful and as dominating as possible, just like a tank. And so there's a very weird way that people, I think in our society now, with men being masculinist about stuff, maybe even thinking that they're in touch with their bodies because they just don't even know what that means. So this is where you get, instead of people being in touch with themselves, they're trying to force themselves to be tough and handle things as though that's body centric when it's,
Yeah. And like, there's this really great book about, how regular soldiers in Germany kind of became, this fascist army called Ordinary Men. And it focuses on the experience of this one group, this one battalion, that was, I believe, sent to Poland and, started randomly killing people. And what's interesting is that what all these guys experienced at first was this bodily reaction to what they were doing, right? And there's this description of, they'd shoot these Jews, and then the guys would go off into the forest and they'd all throw up. And then they talk about how, well, after a while, they didn't throw up anymore. Right. And that, so, their body was telling them, like, this is wrong, this is bad. But then after a while, they just repressed all of that enough to the point where they didn't have that reaction anymore. Their embodiment was just dead.
That's something very white about that experience. It's a description of whiteness, kind of in the Scott writes, but Trump is master. This is an important point, and I just want to underscore this before I read it out loud, because I feel like we have a vested interest, and in people that are center or center left or far left, to want to make sure everything Trump says is like equally bad, without realizing that there's actual, sometimes some important truths mixed in that make it more potent. So Trump is a master, pointing out the hypocrisy of his opponents, the quote-unquote liberal elites, from the Dems to the media. And ordinary folks do have righteous rage at those same elites on both sides. So that is what Trump taps into and misdirects. Yeah, I think he's manipulating things, but think about the things he points out that I think are actually, he's tapping into a righteous anger. Globalization and the way that jobs have been shipped overseas and the way what that's done to the regular working class American, like that's worth complaining about. Donald Trump has some weird anti-globalization ideas that are kind of like sometimes border on being helpful in weird particular cases, or even his sense of military interventionism. We could argue about this. I don't see him as an expansionistic president, and he uses the rhetoric of pulling soldiers out. He hasn't really done that because I don't think his base cares that much about it. But a lot of people see the sort of internationalism as unhelpful, and he taps into some of that.
And I think that Scott, what you're pointing to is sort of another whole piece of this phenomenon, which is the group of people who are voting for Trump as a reaction and because they're pissed off. And I think that's a very real part of that. These people that I was listening to were not talking about that at all. And in some ways I understand those people a lot more than I understand these people that were on the radio, because I totally get the, like, I'm just mad at everybody. And obviously politicians in Washington of any stripes are not helping me. And so, I'm just going to vote for the biggest, dick in the room kind of thing. And just to make everybody mad,
Yeah.
And yeah, that's certainly a big part of what's been happening for sure.
Yeah, that's something that Michael Moore talked about when he was predicting that Trump would win, is that there'd be a lot of blow shit up voting when no one's looking. Yep. And we've seen that. That's how Jesse Ventura became our governor a while
ago. Right.
Yeah. Let's go into Ellen's comment. I've been contemplating people as various spirit beings with different needs, like a forest. Some need full sun, some need partial shade, some are like fungus. But people look at you sideways when you tell them, I'll hold you in the dark. Nice.
Very nice. I think that comment speaks for itself.
Yeah, I feel like, anyways, I could make jokes, but I'm not going to. Something about mushrooms, but I'm not going to go there. Adam wrote, we also believe that reality is subjective, that we can determine our own reality, which of course is true in some level, but everyone else's reality is still happening, and no one talks about that. Mm-hmm. There's this encouraged sort of selfishness. We're even told at various levels that you do your selfish thing, and then the cosmic hand of the market or whatever will kind of balance them out. Right. And when you intervene too much and try to act not selfish, you get into troubles. Like, that's kind of, we're actually encouraged to think that way. So it makes people be myopic.
Yeah.
People are way too solipsistic. I agree, Ellen. Anthony writes, especially since the whole point of common schooling was preparation for democratic citizenship.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And ignorance is not necessarily bliss.
Gerhard of ranked Canada, I'm assuming, failed to understand U.S. politics. So do I.
Join the crowd.
Anthony writes, like Alan Watts said, God is black, the void that allows the stars to shine. We're getting really mystical now.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm loving it.
Writes, I have a question. How to deal with a family member who supports Trump, even though they grew up in poverty and lived through Marcos's regime? Me speaking out against American imperialism and Trump and both sides led to a lecture on how privileged I am every time. I just gave up. I don't want to be privilege baited.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't have any kind of an answer to that question, but I do think that, I think that this sounds like a very similar thing to what Mark was talking about the Uber driver from Africa, right? So they lived through the Marcos regime in the Philippines, and there is something, again, there is something in people that like having that strong man, and I think this is one of the reasons why in the Christian tradition it's so enduring that God is this, old guy with a big beard up in the clouds that's like taking care of everything. There is, and Freud would talk about this in terms of this primordial father need. There is something, right? And this is where this blinder thing goes on, right? Of I'm so narrowly focused, like, okay, yeah, maybe if you point it out or put it in my face, like my life is crap. But at least there's this guy taking care of things. And, I don't know, we could riff very quickly onto this thing you posted about anarchism, about how one of the terrifying things about anarchism is that it actually takes a lot of work because you've got a lot of people that are trying to be individually responsible without having some authoritarian figure fix everything for everybody.
No, and everyone, like almost everyone instinctively thinks you need to have people who have the power to control through threat of violence or actual violence others for the betterment of everyone else. Like, so anarchists reject that premise. I understand it. And so to me, on this end of it, this student from St. Thomas, this law and order voter, is to me an extreme form of this. So like the other day I pulled out of a coffee shop drive-through. And because of this site, I pulled in front of someone, not in a way that I thought was superly aggressive, but I could see why they'd be irritated, even though the speed limit was just 30 miles an hour. But I cut in front of them, and so they drove up on my bumper and started honking angrily. And in that moment, like, I kind of chuckled because, one, I was getting pissed, and laughter helps with that. But then, second, this is the mentality, like, I see all the time, that somehow if you cut someone off in traffic, that you deserve getting honked and yelled at. Like, so whatever comes to you, if he would have come and hit me in the face, he would have thought the whole time he was justified because I'd offended his moral sensibilities. It's what's happened when someone gets hit by a car during a protest. Those animals shouldn't have been out there anywhere. Anyway, they, if they got hit by a car, they deserve it. And so when someone's looking at things from this lens of law and order, they see all these lawless millennials out there that need to be kept in place. And that's a bigger threat to society than a few black people getting shot every once in a while by a cop. So in their way of thinking, having Donald Trump be like this really rabid dog that's being sicked on their enemies makes a lot of sense. And that's where this mistaken, this denial of fascism comes in, because they really don't believe that Trump could guide them towards anything really fascistic, that really the threat of fascism is going to come from the left. And so that they can, they'll put up with anything from the right. It's just, anyways.
All right, let's keep rolling through. We're over time.
Adam writes, I'm reminded about a time I talked to a kid from Iraq a while back who was telling me about how ISIS ISIS is the bully that's on your side.
Exactly.
Anthony Moss writes, fascism isn't just anti-intellectual, it's alter-intellectual, with elaborate conspiracy theories and fanciful speculation to justify its goals. In a way, like, I can sympathize with its, with the tendency towards anti-intellectualism in certain ways. Like, the rejection is of the academic elite. And so they're not against being smart. They just think this whole institutional elite form of education is corruptive and gives a bad worldview. And they're not entirely wrong, because other people say, look, this stuff injects whiteness into people. So there's a critique to be made there. They just then get the whole analysis wrong. Adam writes also, they have been taught to be that way. It's hard to blame them when you really think about it. In a weird way, it's reassuring.
Yeah, well, and that is the thing about formation, is that it's an unconscious thing that happens to us, and we are not really acting out of free will or free choice. And so, yeah, it is kind of weird, because in a certain sense, of course, we do have some responsibility for ourselves and our actions. But on the other hand, and Mark, you know, you're talking about this all the time, right? Things are mostly deterministic. And so there is this strange kind of zombie quality about everything that's going on.
It's like that you mentioned.
That's right.
Exists, but it's really, really hard.
It's like zombie kabuki theater.
The link before from series is a link to a list of traits explaining how these organizations and traits are signs of fascist values and worldviews, even if the person never encountered Nazi ideology. Okay. That's right. You don't have to be indoctrinated into Nazism. It kind of flows. when capitalism is under threat, hence the alt-right, referring back to Anthony's comment earlier. Leah writes, so having said all this, do you have any predictions? You know what, this reminds me of Rocky 3, when Rocky is battling Mr. T's character, and they ask him, Clubber Lang, what he predicts for the bout with Rocky. He says, I predict pain. That's what I whatever happens in November, we're gonna, I think things are going to get worse before they get better. That's what I predict. Yeah. Even if Biden.
I'm mostly too scared to have predictions. Predictions are scary at this point.
Here's a pun.
Ellen making mushroom jokes.
We have some shit talking to do. Well played.
Well played. Eat another cap, Ellen. You'll feel better.
I just jumped over some Oh, we got lots of comments here. Let's blaze
through. Yeah, we got to blaze through.
You have these weird misogynist white supremacist spouting rhetoric, apparently thinking of themselves as scholars because they attended some absurd and obscene white supremacist weekend scholar camp. That's
great. Yes.
A plus with extra credit. Christian writes, I've heard many of his supporters say they could never vote for Biden because he's a baby killer. Ugh, they get very angry when I ask them how many abortions Trump's paid for.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah. Catherine writes, the right figured out how to make a cradle-to-grave system of self-reinforcing propaganda and train kids to fight for their worldview, calling it evangelism or a moral crusade. And at every turn, this system encourages believers to say yes to authority and atrocities if they are affirmed within the belief system. That's really well put.
And well put.
And you can see why injecting like practices that disrupt that is terrifying to people, because there's a lot of comfort in this if you're doing okay-ish, if you're surviving in the system and you can predict it. Ellen writes, we need to get rid of the fun guy pun. That's another mushroom pun for those who aren't following along. There's much mushroom for to be made for better pun this year.
Oh my God.
Stop being so silly. Simon.
I can see the silly Simon is kicking in.
Okay. Anthony's taking Amber to watch this. Okay. Adam writes, it's wild how the alt-right became the regular right in such a short time, which isn't surprising per se, but the language we use to separate them just dissolved in a pretty short time. Side thought, I think we've seen a lot of testing of public acceptance of really vile words and actions in the open that encroach on people's rights, values, and lives. And here we are. I think you're right.
Although my only asterisk to that is that I would just suggest that, you know, this has actually been, you know, the alt-right has been a part of America from the beginning, only we just used to call it things like slavery and Jim Crow and stuff like that. But yeah, in its more modern iteration.
Yes. It's the current form of socially acceptable white supremacy. Right. Yeah. Catherine writes, Ellen Morey working on some pun ideas here.
Yeah. These guys have just lost it. we need to move on.
The original post is so distressing. You're right. Scott wrote, we got to be clear that fascism denial happens on liberal and conservative or politically Dem and Republican sides. You're right. It takes different forms in right-wingers who think Trump isn't dangerous, and those centrist libs who think it's only Trump and not deeper problems the Dems are involved in that produce fascism. Yeah, the fascism denial of the Democratic side of things is a denial about how we've been laying the stage for this, how the actions of Clinton, Obama, other Democrats have set the stage for this. This isn't just some sort of coup coming externally to our system. This is a feature of our system. I mean, this is. Three hearts. Ellen Morey, you must be tripping.
Yeah.
Some more tagging here for some of the people. Yeah. There's mushrooms. Ellen writes, the Tea Party and so much other subculture made way for all to be considered normal. Yeah, that's the big danger, I think, of this Trumpian era is the normalization of stuff that we felt too polite to include in main discourse. So there's an emboldening of things that have been happening all along. And Adam writes, that's absolutely right, Dan, which is why I say it's not a surprise, but how open and accepted it is.
Yeah, and, you know, I do think we went through several decades when some of this stuff was a little more underground. But, you know, again, if you read the history of 20th century America in terms of, for example, how it was perfectly acceptable to destroy an entire black neighborhood, to, hang hundreds, thousands of folks. I think that we got sort of fooled for a little bit into thinking like, oh, this stuff has gone away, or this stuff has, just vanished, or we didn't even know it existed to begin with. And now, it's back out in the open. I would suggest in a way that it was for most of our history. Mm-hmm. And it's shocking. It definitely is shocking, for sure. So, all right. Well, we're way over, but thank you. Thanks for all the great comments. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you guys all appreciate mushrooms. That makes me feel really happy. And we will see you on Monday.
See you Monday, everybody.
All right. Bye.